And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is Monday, the 25th of November, 2024, and it's the start of another week here on the 9 to noon show, but a week with a lot at stake. We have a series of debates taking place over the next 3 days, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and then we all go to the polls, those of us inclined to do so, on Friday. And then on Saturday, we've got a special programme for as long as it takes, live from the Aura Leisure Centre, as we bring you the very latest details from the count there. And as I say, there is a lot at stake. There are 20 candidates contesting 5 seats. We have a panel in today, and they are as follows. John McNulty of Fine Gael, Pat the Cope Gallagher of Fianna Fáil, Mary T. Sweeney of Aintu, Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin. We've got 3 independents as well, namely Jerry McKeever, Arthur Desmond McGuinness, and Frank O'Donnell. And we'll be discussing all the big issues, as you'd imagine, the cost of living, health, homelessness, housing, defective concrete blocks is going to be in there as well, immigration, fisheries, and what have you. So there's an awful lot to get through, and we're dedicating the final 2 hours of the show to that. So what we are doing this morning, tomorrow and Wednesday, is we're putting the papers to one side just to allow us enough time to also cover some of the significant topics and stories of the day. And with that in mind, Gardaí and Emergency Services attended the scene of a fatal road traffic collision in Liscooley, Castlefin, on Friday, the 22nd of November. The collision involved 2 vehicles and it occurred on the N15 at Liscooley at approximately 10 p.m. Tragically, the 2 male occupants from one of these cars were fatally injured. Obviously, a full investigation is ongoing. Inspector Seamus McGonigal, head of the Garda Traffic Corps in Donegal, is with me this morning. And I suppose it's with a view to getting as much information as is possible from those who may have witnessed it. So I gave a brief overview of the incidents and how it unfolded on Friday. What more details can you give us, Seamus?
As you say, Greg, road traffic collision in Liscooley on the N15 on Friday evening around 10 p.m. It happened on the Stranorder side of Liscooley Crossroads. 2 vehicles involved, a white Kia Sportage and a blue Ford Focus. There were 2 occupants in the Ford Focus. The two occupants of that vehicle are deceased. Gordon Galbraith, aged 38, from Castledurg, and Ryan Glenn, aged 25, also from Castledurg. We'd like to offer our condolences to the families of both these gentlemen, and we've offered them, there's an FLO, a family liaison officer in place, and we're offering them every support we can. The second vehicle, there was 2 females and a male, 2 of which remain in ICU in Letterkenny University Hospital, and we wish them well in their recovery. Thank you again, Greg, and everyone at Highland Radio for allowing us to make this appeal. We're appealing for anybody who was on the road between Stranorder and Castlefin between 9:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. on Friday evening gone by. And if they noticed anything of note, and even if they didn't, if they got dash cam footage, if they could provide that to us, again, our contact details, Letterkenny, Gardaí, 07491671100, or the confidential line 1-800-666-111. And if I may also, Greg, just thank those people who assisted us at the scene on Friday evening, both people, drivers and people in cars, but also some of the local residents who assisted us, and thank them for their kindness.
Any information at all? I think really the key message here is, and it's one we've sort of mentioned before, is not to filter it oneself. If you were on that road and you have dash cam footage in and around that time, the Gardaí want to see, they'll go through it and determine what is evidential and what's not.
Exactly, Greg. As I say, even if you're driving along, you may not have noticed anything, but if you have dash cam footage, provide it to us, please, because it may assist the investigation.
And just to be very clear in that process, the Gardaí do all of that work. You just would contact the Gardaí and say, look, I have a dash cam, and from that, they've got expert people in that field that will liaise with you and make it as simple as is possible, and then they can have a look at that information. As you say, you know, an awful tragedy, 2 friends' lives lost, the ripple effect of that, of course, a massive outpouring of grief on social media and also elsewhere, and also 2 people still receiving treatment for quite serious injuries. We wish them a full and speedy recovery. And think on, as you've mentioned and thanked, the first responders and others who would have been on scene. Something, you know, I mean, on all the professionals, you know, they do attend these types of instances, but nothing really can prepare you, I don't think, for, you know, dealing with this type of carnage.
These collisions cause so much grief for so many people. You've got the individuals involved, you've got the extended families and friends and associated, but then you also have people who come on the scene, both the emergency responders and ordinary citizens that just happen upon it. And it's difficult for all. There's no one, residents in the local area too, when it happens in close proximity to their houses, it can have a negative effect on them too. Because it affects, there's such a ripple effect, it affects so many people in a negative way.
Okay, listen, Seamus, thank you for your time. That's Inspector Seamus McGonigal there, head of the Traffic Corps in Donegal. And just to reiterate his appeal, anyone who witnessed the collision or has dash cam footage, contact Letterkenny Garda Station on 074-916-7100, or any Garda station for that matter. Or if you prefer to use the Garda confidential line, the number there is 1-800-666-111. We'll be back shortly. Councillor Niamh Kennedy is Gaheerlach of Donegal County Council and joins us on the programme now. Niamh, thanks for speaking to us. I really do appreciate it. Are you there, Niamh? No, I don't have Niamh. So I'll go to Grania Cafferty of Donegal Refrigeration Limited. They're located at Bridge Street in Killybegs. Grania, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Right, first and foremost, I'm not sure if it came out of the blue or what might or might not have been expected, but I don't think anything could have prepared Killybegs for what was witnessed at the weekend. Can you sort of describe to us how things unfold and what level of warning there was out there in relation to this extent of flooding?
Well, Greg, the first we heard about it was about 6:30 in the morning. Our daughter lives on the street in one of the properties that we have, and she said she thought she heard someone knocking on the door downstairs. So she was up going to her work, and she came down and opened the door, and the water gushed in at her feet. And she ran back up the stairs, and she said to her husband, the street's underwater. And he came down, of course, with his mobile phone and took the little video that went viral. And the street was like a river. It was flowing at such a horrendous high pressure rate. We couldn't believe it. So first thing they did was ring us. We came down right away, and we came to the top of the street, and we just could not believe the amount of water and pressure that was behind this water. And it was flowing down the street. And when we looked down the street, there were two cars completely submerged on the street. And we thought, oh my God, this is dreadful. And thankfully, the fire brigade were there immediately within seconds. And a digger man, Porrick Meehan, who works for the council, stepped in to start to clear a pressure point on the river. And he knocked the walls, which allowed the water to come off the street and into the river, which took the pressure off the water. And only for that, it could have been an awful lot worse. People's premises were under 4 to 5 foot of water at the lowest point. Now, our premises, thankfully, is just slightly on a rise. So the water was up to the door and it was getting in the door. But because of the pressure point being relieved, it started to subside a little.
But is there anything that indicates, Grania, as to what caused this? What could focus this level of water down the street like this? I mean, obviously it's the rain, right? But what happens upstream, so to speak?
Well, I think maybe it may have been trees or branches that were broken off with the high winds that came into the river, and then they were washed down, and eventually at the bridge where the council yard is, it blocked that, so it had nowhere to go. And of course, there was a deluge of rain that night. So it started to build up and it came out into the council yard, and then it had nowhere else to go, and it built up at a huge pressure. So it came back out onto the street. And of course, as you know, water will look for the lowest point. So it starts to flow at a very high speed into into all the premises that are on the street, all the premises. Now, a lot of the people that were living in their houses, they went upstairs in their houses and they didn't know whether they should stay up there, should they come down. But this water was so high that if you came down, it would, you know, you could have drowned. It was, you know, there was that, it was up to the top of the car, so you would have drowned if you came out.
I mean,
you
know, we're counting the cost of damage, but there is no doubt we're lucky we're not counting the cost of life, I think.
We are lucky. We are very, very lucky that nobody was hurt, nobody was drowned. I mean, people could have said, oh, I'm going out into this and I'm going to get out of here or whatever. They would have definitely there would have been loss of life. No, people were sensible enough to stay in their premises and go up higher or whatever until the emergency services came then and helped. And they did. They done marvellous work. They did marvellous work.
Yeah, and it seems some of those interventions that you mentioned actually mitigated against this. As bad as it was, it could have been much worse if it wasn't for the quick response of some.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The quick response of the fire brigade and the Coast Guard and the council, I have to say, yes, absolutely. Without their help and their intervention, it could have been a lot worse. Now, the aftermath of this is horrendous. When the water went down and the mud and the smell and the dampness, I mean, there's 16 businesses on the street. Mm. There's an optician on the street. Her equipment is destroyed. Thousands of pounds worth or euros worth of very expensive equipment. The launderette, their dryers, their washing machines, destroyed. Never to be, can't be, they have to be dumped because they can't be, they'll never work again.
Yeah.
We had items, you know, that are wet and damp, small items like refrigeration components. You just have to throw them out. They can't be used because they're wet. Anything that gets wet. Now, the personal view of people in their homes and their personal belongings, you know, the weeks to Christmas, it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, the mood is very, very sad, mm-hmm. you know, on the street. And of course there's anger, because this has happened before, about 7 years ago, where something similar has blocked the river and the river came out onto the street. And this is their second time mm-hmm. to lose their personal belongings. Thomas Pringle on the street, his office is completely, his computers, everything, his furniture, completely destroyed.
I don't know everything out of it. I mean, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of how water gets away, but wind and blowing even some bushes or trees into a certain area shouldn't trigger this type of flooding if the flood protection is adequate, if you know what I mean. Like, how this happened, it shouldn't be able to happen, you'd imagine.
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I think maybe the first time it happened, something should have been done. I mean, there should have been a system put into the process that it would never happen again. But it didn't happen. I mean, it's been left on the long finger. Maybe something will be done now. This street is very, very old. It's probably, the first houses on the street were probably late 1600, 1700.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was never anything like this.
Yeah.
The street, the river never came out onto the street in 300-400 years. And now all of a sudden it's happening regularly. You know,
okay.
So, I mean, the council has to look at ways of preventing these things. I know we can talk all day about global warming, and it is here. And the deluge of rain that is coming down is different to the way it was. And the storms are different. And everything is different. But we must prepare ourselves.
Well,
we must make sure that our rivers and lakes and everything else are able to take it.
Well, just in relation to, obviously, the biggest champions of climate change and awareness of this is the government themselves. So if it is they that are putting in the policies, obviously, to try and to limit that, you also have to, you can't then argue and say, well, you weren't expecting this either. So towns like Killybegs need protection. Grania, thank you very much indeed. That's Grania Cafferty of Donegal Refrigeration Limited. Councillor Niamh Kennedy, Cathaoirleach of the Council, joins him now. Good morning to you, Niamh.
Good morning. Good morning, Greg. Good morning, okay. Listeners.
Right. The cleanup is underway. But we were listening to Grania there. We had a warning of this a couple of years ago, and people, of course, they're going to thank everyone who did their best to mitigate this and who will assist with the cleanup. But they're asking themselves, how could this happen again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody is really distraught from the whole experience has been a nightmare for everyone. I suppose it was a combination also of a very heavy snowfall that night as well. And once the snow started to melt, that was a double whammy from the rain also. The rain was persistent all night, but it wasn't very, very heavy, which was because I would have known that. But it certainly had the double effect of when the snow started to melt that the whole thing came down. It comes down past where I live in a little stream, and it works its way down through a lot of farmland and a lot of the back of houses and factory. And then it stops, it kind of, it doesn't stop, but it is affected then at the council yard. Now, on the Friday evening, that bridge was checked by the council workers because they were aware that it was going to be rain, but not to the extent of what we had expected. They checked both ends of it and it was all clear. But again, Saturday night, they ended up taking out three lorry loads of silt from the shore side where it all had driven down, just pushed right down toward the sea. And that was going to block again if it was a high tide. So that had to be cleaned out as well on Saturday night. They're at it again this morning.
But do you believe there's anything that could have been done in advance to ensure the pathway that the water will naturally follow, i.e. flood defences, are checked with regularity? And I don't know if it's dredging or tree cutting or whatever is required to ensure that these properties and this town is protected. Is that happening?
It's not happening. The back of those houses is quite open. We had to toss a wall yesterday on Saturday as well to let the floods go free, and a wall was undermined and it was going to fall into the river to cause more of a breakup and a problem. So we ended up having to do that. But the flood relief will have to be looked at. The back of those houses are going to need to be protected. Again, as Grania has rightly said, it was back in 2017 that the same thing happened, although this time it was much worse. But a lot of debris seems to be coming down through farms and down through from woodland and all of that, and it's catching. And the place it seems to catch is just at the council yard because there's a small culvert there. So that's where they keep that clear. But the farmers, you see, would have got money before years ago to make sure that their streams and whatever was cleared. That has stopped a long time ago. So the OPW need to step up now and help with getting these streams cleared, because I do know that there has been meetings throughout nationally to speak about these flood events and to speak about these disasters that are going to happen into the future. So it's nothing new to any of us. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's going to be more of a regular occurrence unless we put in the mitigation measures to prevent this from happening.
What supports are there now as the cleanup begins in terms of, I suppose, people's homes, damage to their homes, carpets, wooden floors, white goods that will have to be dumped, couches, of course, businesses too, as they try and get back earning effectively. Yeah. So what supports are there? What has been announced for them?
Yeah, well, the skips arrived on Saturday evening, generators arrived, and dehumidifiers, anything that we could get. We're still short a few by this morning, but we're managing now to get everything sorted. Skips were filled and emptied and refilled again over the weekend. Sandbags still in place and all of that there. Obviously, with no electricity, they needed the generators on the streets. We've asked them to kind of turn off the generators at night to let people sleep. Some people have had to be housed in local emergency accommodation. That was sorted out. They're still there. They've been given vouchers for food to ensure that they're all fed and helped through the next few days. One man in particular woke up and he was in his bed, and his bed was floating in the bedroom. It was absolutely shocking. All of the electrics is destroyed, and as Grania had rightly said, I mean, the laundry, the gas tank had to be removed from there, which quite dangerous, so that had to be taken away professionally.
Yeah, there have been calls made on government to, you know, offer humanitarian aid and money for businesses and what have you.
Yeah.
Have you any indication if that's forthcoming at this point?
It's coming. What we're doing is, well, obviously the social welfare, community welfare officers were on site yesterday, and they met with the people, the households. So it's the businesses now that we'll be focusing on now this week. A lot of the insurance companies and the assessors will be coming out to some of the businesses today. And a lot of the businesses have not done anything with their property yet because they want the assessors obviously to see them, which is fair enough. But some of the businesses that have not got any insurance, that will now, they will be sorted as well with the humanitarian aid that will be coming through.
Okay. And good luck trying to get insurance when it comes to renewal time in this area going forward.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, thank you for that. That's Councillor Niamh Kennedy Cahirlock of Donegal County Council. A caller says it's time the council cleaned the rivers the way they always were cleaned years ago. And every time we talk about this, it puts me in mind of a conversation with a gentleman who was associated with or used to work with an office in Donegal Town that... That a whole group of different agencies liaised in this area to ensure or to best ensure things like this didn't happen. A caller says the flooding on Bridge Street is a result of a failure and neglect when nothing was done over the last 7 years. It is a shame that the elected representatives of the area have continually failed the people of Killybegs. No one lifted a finger to do anything over the last 7 years, but we heard a counterclaim there that efforts to keep this culvert clear were made. Why has TD on the street done anything about this and spent 6 million in the town? I'm not sure, but the listener will know what that makes. Hedge cutting isn't allowed until October. The trimmings aren't cleaned up. The drains then end up blocked. This is a big problem, says another listener. Right, just to let you know that we are going to take a break shortly, but coming up we have the first of our three local election debates, and we're going to be discussing and debating some of the big topics that affect you and what our panellists believe they can do to make life better for you, I suppose. The panel today, Frank O'Donnell, Independent, Arthur Desmond McGuinness, Independent, Jerry McKeever, Independent, Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin is going to be joining us, John McNulty of Fine Gael, Mary T. Sweeney of Aintu and Pat the Cope Gallagher of Fianna Fáil. If you have specific questions, you can get them into us right now. I'll try and integrate them over the course of the 2 hours that we've dedicated for this conversation. We have a second debate tomorrow and a third on Wednesday, by the way. We can see from opinion polls it's neck and neck amongst the major parties. Mary T. Sweeney probably will cite Aintu's highest ever reading in a poll. And independents too at this point, 17% of first preferences. So there's an awful lot to play for here. And we will be teasing all of that out in conversation with our panellists after 10. By the way, just in case you are watching the show, as hundreds of you are across the various platforms, for simplicity, because we're switching studios, we'll be starting a second stream for the debates. But I'll get that going very soon after 10. Which will give everyone a chance to hop on. If you want to watch the debate, you can watch it in its entirety on a YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That means if you're at home, you can watch it on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, which means you can effectively watch it on the big screen. And we're across X and our Facebook pages as well, of course. Back with more shortly. Last Thursday, I think it was, wasn't it? It was Thursday. I was involved, or we, Highland Radio, were involved in a debate. It was fantastic, actually. Students had organised a pre-election debate discussion. Seven candidates turned up. Lots of issues were discussed, perhaps not as many as possible because it's hard to move these things on. But anyway, it was all very interesting and fair play. Seven of the candidates were able to attend and did so. And a lot was discussed. But it came to the issue of SNAs and the situation as it relates to the struggles of SNAs in Loretto, in Milford, I think drew audible gasps almost from the politicians that were there, which is telling in a way in that they learnt for the first time, I think, the reality. Now, you can read into that what you wish, right? But I don't think I'm misreading the situation. I think for most of the politicians there, they were like, right, okay, is this what's going on? Not all, but some. So we wanted to discuss this on the programme. Fiona Shields is with us. How are you getting on, Fiona? Thanks for calling in.
Not at all, thanks.
It's good to have you with us. And Karen Sweeney. Hi, Karen.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Fiona, I'll start with you if that's okay, because I think this is what surprised people. There are a number of schools in Milford, but there's two secondary schools, okay?
That's
two
right.
fine schools. These have a fantastic building there. So there's Loretto in Milford, of course, and there is also Mulroy College.
That's right, yeah.
And these both of these schools are big schools. They're pulling students from the same areas.
Absolutely.
Everything is the same, really, effectively, until it comes to special needs assistance. So talk to us about the difference between these two schools.
Well, it's not just on special needs assistance. Mulroy is a JESH school, which means it's considered disadvantaged. So they get extra resources to ensure that every child has equal opportunities and to achieve their potential. We're not a JESH school, even though, as you say, we're drawing students from the exact same catchment area.
Same demographics. There's
same
no
demographics,
difference in the students.
Same socioeconomic area. And so that's where we differ now. Mulroy have a lot more SNAs than we do. I think they might have 14. We have 5.5. Now, we've been trying to jump through hoops to get extra SNAs. We've had an exceptional review. We've had two of them, actually, in the last 3 years. The last one just before the summer. So up to that, we have 800 students or more. We had 4.5 SNAs up to that. We got an extra one SNA. Now, the process you go through for an exceptional review is laborious. It's time consuming. There's a huge amount of information has to go into it. And, you know, I think the management in the school thought that we would get more, but it's based on what happens that day, what they see that day, the paperwork that's involved. And we ended up with one extra SNA.
So all of that process that you went through, as you say, laborious, time-consuming, making the strongest argument possible, yeah. You simply could only go from 4.5 SNAs to 5.5. Now, obviously, on the face of it, that's a 20% increase or 25% increase.
Absolutely.
But you're starting from such a low base.
We're starting from a low base.
Right. And why is it that Milford has 14? But Mulroy has 14.
We don't know. You see, I suppose it's the SNA allocations are based on a needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be that it was the individual needs. So you'd get, if a student came forward and had a psychological assessment and they were deemed to have an SNA, they'd get an SNA, and that SNA was for that student only. But now it's based on the needs of the school. So the needs of the school can vary from week to week, day to day, month to month. And the school now has to decide where to put them. Now, why Mulroy has more than us, I don't know.
There must be some element of the DESH school status that some other rules are applied because it's...
There could possibly be. Now, we don't know that. We know our own situation. And, you know, our own situation is that, like, we have... possibly 30 students who are on the highest level of need, and we have 5.5 students for that.
Okay.
So we're sort of, you know, trying to deal with all of those students on particular days, and I suppose Karen will go more into that.
Karen, before we talk about sort of your schedule and what you do, like, what would you have expected in training to become an SNA, right, and the best practice and all that type of stuff? What would your job entail, and you know, how many students would you work with and so on and so forth, if we were to do it as maybe it should be?
Yeah, well, I suppose when I came into the job initially, Greg, it was one student, one SNA. That has very much changed now, and it has probably changed for the better, because students don't need full time very often in post-primary school. They are happy in some subjects, not so happy in other subjects. It depends, you know, can depend on so many different things. Every SNA is in the job to help and to care for their students. And that's what you want to do. And you want to give them everything you can. It's in every SNA in the country. You want to give every student what you can, what they need. And right now, we're not able to do that.
So talk to me about your rota, or
my
however,
timetable,
your timetable, I beg your pardon.
So my timetable, I suppose it's it's clear to see with the different colours. There's six different colours on the timetable, which indicates there's six different groups to be seen in the day. And I see a student now maybe first thing Monday morning. I don't see them again until Tuesday afternoon. That's a long time for a student not to see their SNA. And that's not just my timetable, that's across the board in our school. It's everyone's timetable, really. I suppose mine just last week, there was more students added to it. And you don't know where to put the students into the timetable. You have to knock someone off to put someone on. We don't know how to make those decisions because the students are all as entitled as each other to have the help. And you want to help them all, but you can't.
So what's the implications of, you know, seeing a student on a Monday morning and then not being able to see them to Tuesday afternoon? What impact does that have?
Well, I suppose usually you know exactly what's going on with a student. You know maybe why they've underperformed in an afternoon or whatever it might be. I get to them the next day and I'm hearing things from other people in the class that
you're
have
playing
happened.
Catch up, are you?
Yeah,
almost all the time.
You're hearing other things that from their classmates that have happened, and you feel terrible that you didn't know about it, you weren't there. Do you know? And that's across the board. That's with six different groups of students. So, do you know? So you're constantly missing things. You're constantly hearing things, and you really should be there. They deserve the help. They deserve the attention.
It's very difficult for you because, you know, you're getting up ready to go to another week's work on a Monday morning, right? You know what you want to do and you know what you need to do, but you're going into an environment that you know you're being hindered in. You're being spread too thin, you know, with the best wood in the world.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the fact that we have lost our school psychologist, you know, we were allocated a school psychologist, but recently a letter came to the school to say that was being taken away because of staffing issues in NEPS or the NCSE. And so that plays a bearing on that as well, because without that, you know, our own SEN department in collaboration with ourselves and school management are trying to decide what students need the most care. And so, you know, it is, that sort of thing is impacting. We don't have a special classroom in the school, which also impacts on that. And you know, possibly Mulroy have, you know, an autism unit, so they probably get more SNAs for that reason as well. But we don't have a special classroom. We were granted an extension to the school in 2019. It's at the planning stages now. The wheels go around very slowly. So, you know, once it goes through planning, it'll have to go to procurement. So we won't have that special classroom for a number of years yet.
I mean, you know, these types of interviews and going public like this is really, you only begin this when you get to a desperate stage, okay? Because I presume, and I'm sure you've already outlined, that every effort has been made by management up to this point, including securing one additional SNA to try and improve the situation. But there comes a point where you have to speak out, don't you? Because, Karen... Yeah. There's a window here where you have students or students are in the school and this is about them maximising their potential.
Absolutely.
Right. And how can they maximise the potential when your expertise is spread so thinly?
Yeah.
And the knock-on effects for them are potentially lifelong.
Yes, absolutely.
That's how important this is.
It is. You're trying to set them up in junior years for their junior cert and in senior years for their leaving cert. But if they're not maximising their potential, it's going to have an impact on their life. And I suppose we're not just dealing with students in the classroom. We have a lot of needs outside the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we're leaving classes early to do timeouts, maybe to take students on a movement break. You have emotional regulation breaks. They're all aside from the students that we're with. We have six diabetics in the school. So we obviously need to check in on them three times a day to check their levels. Those checks could take 5 minutes. They could take 25 minutes. It depends. Every day is different.
Mm-hmm. There's something you said a little earlier on, and I think it deserves just reiterating, in that all of the students that need SNAs need SNAs. Their need and is equal.
Yep.
But you're going into work and having to choose who... gets your time, but that's an impossible choice because they all need your time.
Yeah.
Like, how, it's not fair that anyone is put into that position, because that's not like, you know, breaking your back hard at work. The emotional pressure of that is huge.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they all need the assistance equally.
We do, but, like, you know, we do it to the best of our ability.
There's no doubt about that, of course.
And, you know, we will do what we can for all of those students. And, you know, even if it's just meeting them on the corridor and making them feel that little bit better about themselves, if we can't be in their class. And we all, you know, we all have different students, but we all work with the same cohort of students, and we just do our very best for them, as do all the staff in the school. You know, like, everybody is under pressure because of, you know, the lack of an EPS psychologist.
What needs to change, though, just in the last minute or two? Because, you know, there was talk of Dash Plus and Dash this and Dash the other, right? And I'm not being disrespectful, I hope, in saying that, okay? But really, it didn't, for me anyway, explain a pathway as to how there can be, how we can have a fairer system for all children. Okay, so, I mean, either Fiona or Karen, in the first instance, obviously, if the school was given more SNAs, fantastic, right? Is that what the solution to this problem is, as simple as that? As Minister McConnell Ogue makes representations to the Department of Education, they go, right, there's a severe imbalance here in how we treat one school versus the other. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the schools have to be treated all the same. Like, you know, I know what our needs are. We need an extension that'll have the facilities for our special education needs children. We need access to an EPS psychologist. We need to get JESH status to bring us in line with the other schools in the area, and we need extra SNAs. So all of those put together, now where the answer is, and I hope the politicians can answer that and give us what we need, because, like, those needs are great for our students. You know, like, the students need our support every day, every hour of every day when they're in school. And we are advocating for the students who maybe don't have somebody to advocate for themselves.
No, I know that, and that's really important. And I'll be honest as well, I know I'm not going to put it to anyone, but retaining staff in this situation is going to be a challenge, because an SNA could perhaps move to another school where they feel more fulfilled in their role. But anyway, that's everyone has to make that own decision themselves. Yeah. But look, we often see that can be a knock-on effect of things like this. Fiona or Karen, anything that you wish to add? Because I really do appreciate you coming down to us, or up. I'm not sure if he's come up or down.
Just hoping that the politicians will listen to us, particularly this week. Our school needs an extra, several SNAs. We'll take anything we can get right now. Our students need them. It's not about us, it's about the students.
Yeah.
No, and you can't wait and go through a massive application process to either be rejected or awarded one. Someone has to say, right, okay, these 800 plus students, because it affects the whole school, right, they need to be treated the same as other students just because they happen to be in another building. Okay. Thanks very much, ladies. Fiona Shields and Karen Sweeney. We'll be back with more after these.
Thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And what a weekend of weather it was. And our transmission system got an awful hammering. And I'm not quite sure who all they were, but they worked really, really hard over the course of the weekend to get us back on air. And I think we are, for the most part, back broadcasting across the region as we hoped we would be. All right, today we'll bring a mix of sunshine and scattered showers, some heavy with a chance of hail and isolated thunderstorms, highest afternoon temperatures of 7 to 9 degrees and continuing windy for a time, but with the winds moderating through the day. Just to let you know that coming up just after 10 o'clock, we begin our local election debates. Well, not local election debates, our general election debates for this locality. Our guest today, John McNulty, Pat the Cope Gallagher, John McNulty of Fine Gael, Pat the Cope Gallagher of Fianna Fáil, Frank O'Donnell, Independent, Pierce Doherty of Sinn Féin, Jerry McKeever, Independent, Mary T. Sweeney of Ain't Do, and Arthur Desmond McGuinness, who is an Independent. All have been invited. I presume all will attend. If they don't, I will let you know. Keep your questions coming into us, or your points, if you wish to, on 086 60 25,000. Now, Lee Gooch, you're sideways on me, but sure, I can hear you, so that's the important thing.
Sideways? But, well, sure. I'm like, that's not bad, is it?
Well, it's not fantastic either, but anyway. Right. What are you doing back on the show?
Well, Camille, I'm just glad to be here because it's very Christmas. We played the Band-Aid song 2024 remix this morning, and then we're down here at Scullwara School in Milford, delighted. And you can see behind us all the boys and girls dressed in Christmas gear, and we were singing. We had Mr. Fox. Mr. Fox, fine bit of singing this morning?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Very much so. You know, you need to put a bit of practice in now. You're a wee bit of tune. The boys and girls were just absolutely brilliant. But, Greg, we were down here last year. Remember, we linked into yourself and John program. It was a Christmas school showcase in association with Callaghan's Electrical and Kiernan's this year. And we're delighted to be back around the schools in the Northwest. We're here today to highlight to other schools. It could be your opportunity for us to be broadcasting live from your school this year. And Sharon, the principal, Miss Peoples, good morning to you.
Good morning, Lee.
Ah, sure, Camille, you brought it all back to us. Oh, look, we're just now, a few tips for the schools that are going to be nominating their school to be part of the showcase this year, to have the biscuits and the coffee.
Yeah.
And the croissants.
And the croissants. And
yes.
The scones.
But we had a fabulous time this morning. The boys and girls were singing for us. And we got a homework pass as well, believe that or not, Greg. What advice would you give to any schools out there that would like to be nominated and would love Highland Radio to be down at their school this year?
Well, Lee, it was an absolutely fantastic day last year when you came down to our school. We couldn't believe we won. So the boys and girls in all the classes went together and wrote an email to you explaining about how fantastic Scullwara is. I'm sure you couldn't not but come down to see us. So it was a great, great day.
And the boys and girls, you showcased so much of their talent. They had a great performance and we had mighty crack with all the boys and girls. And the boys and girls are very pleased with me this morning because we've got a homework pass thanks to Miss Peoples. Mr. Fox, a fine bit of guitar playing this morning.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Yes, and they're all tuned in. And tell me now, you were just saying to me briefly that the fifth and sixth class are going to be doing a special performance this year.
That's right, down in RC Donald, the old folks home. We went down last Christmas and we go again this Christmas and have a carol service.
And I bet you everybody just loves that and gets us all into the Christmas spirit.
Ah, they do. It lifts the whole place up.
Yeah. You keep practicing yourself. The boys and girls are brilliant now. Moonshire, thanks for having us down today. So, Greg, all I can say is to any schools that are listening and would like to nominate themselves, the email address is christmas@highlandradio.com. We need to have your applications via email in by Friday the 13th of December. We're going to be visiting two schools on Wednesday.
All right, so explain that to me, because I was distracted there briefly setting up the other room. So you will visit schools. We're going to visit schools in Christmas week, right?
Yes, it's actually going to be on, because in the run-up to Christmas, every day counts, right? So it's going to be on Wednesday the 18th Brilliant. Of December. It's going to be two schools.
And Callaghan's Electrical are on board with us as well. They're going to give the school a Samsung tablet and also a load of selection boxes for the whole school from Kiernan's as well. Our great friends at Kiernan's.
Correct.
Ah, so you're not coming empty-handed.
Well, sure, it is Christmas, you know, so you have to bring goodies to the school. So we want to highlight how special each of these schools are. So it's going to be tough.
And all the students there are dressed up for Christmas. Could you grown-ups get out the way so we can see all the effort they put into it?
Come on, grown-ups. He wants you to use big sensible people
out
there.
Look at this.
Shoot.
Wow.
Sure. Give Greg a nice wave.
Hi. Yay. Hello, Greg, everybody.
Hello. Greg saying hello. Say hello, Greg. He'll love that. Say it's Greg, right? I know it's not true. Say he's the best DJ. Greg, you're the best DJ. 3-2-1. 3-2-1.
No, we have to set up a different mode.
What do you think?
We have to set up a different mode on Zoom to pick that up, unfortunately. But anyway, right, so fantastic. Two schools will be visited on Wednesday the 18th. The chosen schools each receive a tablet from, a Samsung tablet no less, from Callaghan's Electrical. Fair play to the crew at Callaghan's for getting on board. And Kiernan's, our good friends, are providing the selection boxes. And all you have to do if you're a school is simply send the name and address of your school, how many pupils there are, and tell us what you would like to do for us on the day. So it could be putting on a wee show, dancing, singing or whatever. And they would be broadcasting not only on the radio, Lee, but on the internet as well, streaming to so many people all across the world. What an amazing way to showcase your fantastic school.
That's going to be a great buzz. So I would say to any schools, like you just said, it's Christmas at Highland Radio. Get your thinking caps on. Send us a nice short email. It doesn't have to be a long-winded thing. And by Friday the 13th of December, you have today's the 25th, so you have about 2.5 weeks to get it in there. And you never know, we could be visiting your school very soon.
Who shows it on? Or
it's going to be in yours.
Is it on my show?
Breslin's.
Yay! Oh, right, okay, that's fantastic. Listen, Lee, well done to you and the team. Very, very excited. We'll chat about that again tomorrow for catch the ones in the cars as well. Lee, and make sure everyone who wants to enter does enter and knows all about it. But for now, well done to you.
Thanks very much. See you. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye, everybody. Yeah, we you have to make some slight adjustments on the stream there so you can hear the students, but we'll have all that. Perfect. Don't worry about that. Okay, listen, that's where we have to leave it for this hour. We're going to end the live stream if you're watching because we are going to restart from Studio 2 for our first panel of election candidates. You can listen on the radio, of course. You can watch online. We'll be back with that in just a couple of moments. Stay right where you are.